Welcome to Bina 2025, Term 1. Hopefully it's going to be an amazing, exciting year with lots of different things happening, so stay tuned. Especially started like into February, because I thought that was when everyone's back, but I still got a few apologies for today, so it's okay, we'll send the links out. So today, this term's topic is called Navigating Daily Struggles. So let me just first give you a little bit of an intro and a context. So something that we've spoken about many times, of course, is the inner conflict between the animal soul and the godly soul, where the godly soul, of course, is selfless in pursuit of meaning and purpose, whereas the animal soul is self-preservation, pursuit of materialism and pleasure, and egocentricity, which therefore breeds the egocentricity. The ego it gives birth to toxic emotions, bad character traits, and so on and so forth. Now, the fact that we sometimes have feelings or emotions or personality weaknesses that could be problematic is not bad, meaning they might be negative, but they're not bad in the sense that we're not a bad people if we have them. We're just normal. Right? That's an important thing to establish. But nevertheless, we have daily struggles. Everyone has personality weaknesses or fragilities and so on, which breeds sometimes emotional responses which are unhealthy, which again are just all normal stuff, but we have to deal with it. And we all suffer from that. We suffer from different ones. Each of us are different because each of us have a different animal soul. Just like there's different animals, there's different animal souls. And it just means that we're different, but we all have these little things that we have to work on. That's the way we were born. That's the way we were designed. And that's our job, to work on these things and connect to God and live a life of meaning and purpose and so on. But part of that, of course, is to become more refined people, better character, and so on. So let's have a look. First of all, when we talk about these weaknesses or emotional responses which are more toxic, what do we mean? What's some examples? Over to you. Asad, I'm going to try and make you work harder this term. Well, what am I talking about? Sorry?
Anger.
Anger would be one, of course.
Jealousy.
Impatience. Impatience, yes. I don't have that on my list. You're right, actually. Funny, because my mother always told me that I'm very impatient and I didn't put it on the list. That's not good.
Jealousy.
Jealousy, yeah, just was mentioned. Yeah, it's good. Sorry?
Frustration.
How about worry?
Anxiety.
Anxiety, worry, related. Moodiness. Sorry?
Intolerance, yeah.
Mood swings, like people just moody sometimes, some people, not always.
Grudges,
very good. Feeling of grudges. Sorry? Faribles, yeah. That's just the translation in South African.
Resentment,
yeah, hate or resentment. Guilt, how about guilt?
Yeah.
Fear, of course. Now, not all fear is bad. By the way, not all worry is bad either, but we're talking about bad worry or bad fear or bad guilt, right? Yeah, so that's a good list. So just for those who didn't hear everyone saying it, so we're talking about anxiety, worry, anger, rage, and temptation could be one also. You tempt to do something, right?
Impatience,
bad moods, guilt, just generally just distracting thoughts, just generally hate, resentment, and so on. Okay. Now, they're all kind of fitting into different categories. In the book of Tanya, from the founder of Chabad Hasidic philosophy, he talks about that we have a tradition in the Talmud that the world was created with four foundational elements, which is fire, water, wind, and dust. And he says that they actually replicate itself in the spiritual as well, and the animal soul has these four elements as well, which give each one lends itself to different character problems. So, for example, fire would give room for anger and haughtiness and egocentricity. Water is an interesting one. Water is always a symbol of temptation. The reason is because water feeds and water nourishes everything that grows that is pleasurable, and therefore when it comes out in the negative, it's a force which gives room to pursuit of pleasure, temptation to always pursue things which are good for me in the moment, right? Wind would be like emptiness and just, you know, arrogance and sort of showing off and things like that. Dust would be things like laziness, sadness. When I say sadness, I don't mean depression in that sense, clinical depression. I mean just being sad and down and not being besimcha, not being happy. Okay, let's see. It's okay. Anyway, yeah. All right. So we have all the different things. Okay. Now, I always do this every time I speak about a similar topic. Just want to make clarification and just be very clear about this, that we're not, the strategies we're talking about are always helpful, but it's not always directed at people who go through these challenges which are at the level of a pathology. In other words, a level of mental illness, right? You heard me say many times, there's depression with a small D, depression with a big D, and so on. I'm talking about normal stuff. I'm not talking about... And the difference between normal and an illness, there is a gray area, of course, because it's sometimes hard to tell what the difference is and where it crosses over. But the difference is that when we talk about normal struggles, we talk about getting angry or being jealous, at the end of the day, foundational to Jewish thinking is that we have bechira. We have choice. And therefore we have a choice, and we can, it is in with our reach, within our ability to do something about it, right? And to change it. It might be hard, it might be a process, it might be a journey, whatever the case is, but we can control it. We need the tools, but we can control it. When someone crosses over, like for example, regular anxiety becomes big anxiety with a big A and it becomes a real mental illness, not always do we have the same free choice. I think that's the definition, perhaps, in this context of something that is just normal behavior or normal struggle as opposed to a real mental health issue where it becomes so into it and so immersed in it to the point where our free choice is... We always have some level of free choice because we can get help and we can try, but it's been impaired a little bit, and therefore we need other intervention, so it's different, right? So what I'm talking about, obviously, as I always do, in this setting is we're talking about normal struggle. Now, all of these struggles, if we break them down, at the end of the day, they come down to our emotional state, what they call today emotional regulation or emotional dysregulation, and so on. So what is emotions? We've talked about this many times, but just to review so we're clear. So emotions is really who we are, it's our personality, and it's our response, right? It's our response to the outside world. It's how we respond to things, to people, to experiences, and so on. So what's the Jewish view in general of emotions? We've talked about this also. I just want to make it clear so it's a good setting for what we're going to talk about. We know in the Torah, if we look in the Torah, of course, the Jewish religion is very much action-based. Yeah, so we have a commandment, a mitzvah. Men should put on tefillin. We should have a mezuzah on our door. We should eat kosher, whatever. It's all action-based for the most part. What's interesting is that if we look at the Torah closely, there are actually many, not many, but there are a number of mitzvot which actually govern our emotional state, right? Both good and bad. So for example, there's a mitzvah to love God. A separate discussion of how you fulfill that mitzvah. But there's a mitzvah to ve'ahavta et Hashem elokecha, you should love God. We say it in the Shema. Or et Hashem elokecha tira, you should fear God. Whatever that means. Fear doesn't mean be frightened. He's not a big boogeyman. It's just fear, respect, or understand the reality of His presence. Whatever it means. It can mean many different things. But there is what we call chovat halevavot. There are duties of the heart, right? As we call them. In other words, the mitzvot that govern the heart. You should love your fellow as yourself. Which, by the way, doesn't only mean about action. I'll just make that clear. It's an interesting thing. Ahavat Yisrael, as we call it, right? Love of a fellow Jew, for example, doesn't only mean doing favors. It means that too, right? It means helping, visiting the sick, comforting the mourner, helping out people, lending money. All those things are true. Doing favors for other people is all part of the mitzvah of Ahavta L'Racha Kamocha. But we learn clearly that it also involves an emotional element. In other words, the real fulfillment of Avat Yisrael is to have empathy, is to have care, is to have compassion, is to actually love the other person. The Rambam, Maimonides, talks about this in a very interesting setting. He says, he talks about the requirement when you, hospitality, when you especially in olden times when people would travel and they would then come and needed a place to stay and people would be hospitable to them and invite them, right? So taking care of guests. There's, talks about three components. We learn this from Avraham Avinu, that he would give them to eat and drink. He would give them to eat, and then there was leviyah, which means to accompany them on their way, right? To see them out, or in olden times, actually to make sure that they're taken care of. Is someone walking them home? Are they going in a safe area, and so on? And the Rambam says that the main part, the greatest part of the mitzvah of hachnasat orchim, of hospitality, is the third one, seeing them out properly. Why? When you give someone to drink and to eat, okay, so they need a meal, so you gave them a meal. Doesn't mean you actually really care about them. But when you see them out and you take care of them and you accompany them and you respect them, that actually shows a level of emotion. It shows you actually not just a robotic favor you're doing for them, it's actually something that you really care and something you're doing, right? So that's, I'm just giving examples of mitzvot that have to do with feelings, that have to do with emotions. The opposite is also true. We have transgressions that have to do with emotions, right? So jealousy is actually, it's hard to say this, right? Because it's a difficult one. But jealousy is an avirah, it's a transgression. Meaning, because the Torah says, lo tachmod. You should, one of the Ten Commandments, actually. I mean, there are different interpretations of how you understand that, but according to many interpretations, this is the way it is. That lo tachmod means do not covet. Do not covet means essentially jealousy. Like, don't begrudge the fact that someone else has something you don't have and really want to have it, right? That's jealousy. Hatred. Do not hate your fellow in your heart. Grudges. Someone said grudges before. So we find in the Torah there's two mitzvot. When someone does something to you, there's two things you shouldn't do. One is revenge, called nekima. One is bearing a grudge, which is netira. Now, revenge, that's a practical thing, so you shouldn't do it back to them, right? To get them back kind of thing. But even if you don't, just to bear a grudge is an issue, right? So there's the Torah sort of mandates that we work with our feelings, we work with our emotions, because it's good for us and good for the other people. Anger, of course, you know, anger is a very big problem, right? All those things. So then there's emotions which are kind of in the middle. What I mean by that is they're not mitzvot and they're not avirot. In other words, they're not mitzvot and they're not transgressions. They're somewhere in the middle, meaning it depends how we apply them. My famous example of this is grief, right? So grief's an emotion. It's often an emotion which is a mitzvah. In other words, when one has a tragedy, God forbid, one should express emotion, one should express grief, which is why in the Torah we have all these laws of Shiva and mourning and so on, because it's a mitzvah to express grief. But the Talmud also says, if you don't do that, it's very terrible. But if you excessively grieve and you don't move on, it's also a problem, right? So it's grief, it depends how it's applied. Now, many emotions like that sort of fall in the middle. It all depends how you apply them. Now, here's something that's very important to understand. Because when we talked about examples of inner struggles that got to do with emotions, like hate and intolerance and impatience, they all fall under these midot, these emotions which the Torah tells us to stay away from. But here we have to understand one very important foundation, and that is like this. What is the problem? Like, when is it wrong, right? So we know that Kabbalistically, and this is something we've gone over many times, but Kabbalistically, the way the human experience works is this. We have seichel, we have intellect, and we have emotions, right? We have 10 powers of the soul, 3 are intellectual, 7 are emotional. But then we have what's called the garments of the soul. Right, so there's the 10 powers of the soul, which are the raw energies, 3 intellectual, 7 emotional. Then there's the 10 power. Then there's the 3 garments. What do 3 garments mean? Because when God created the human being, there's these 10 powers that govern the soul, but these 10 powers have to be expressed somehow. So they express themselves in different ways, 3 different ways. The analogy given for this is garments, because just like a person, there's the person, and then there's how you express yourself as a person, right? Which is the way we dress. So depend, like, you know, people express themselves different ways. When you go to the gym, you dress one way. When you go to a simcha, you dress a different way. So, right, because you're expressing yourself differently. The garments of a person is an expression of the human being. What are those three garments? Those three garments are thought, speech, and action. Right? Thought, speech, and action. Now, I'm just giving you a sharing with your Kabbalistic idea so we understand it, so we're able to apply it practically. Right? So in those three garments, thought, speech, and action, speech and action are very different from thought. Right? Why? Speech and action is something you don't do all the time, number one. And they kind of relate to something outside of me, right? So if I choose not to talk to you, then I'm not talking. It doesn't affect me, I just didn't share the information with you, right? Action, the same thing. If I decide not to do something, I don't change, it's just that I didn't do the thing, right? The thing hasn't been done. I mean, obviously it has an effect on me. When a person talks to other people, it's good for them. When they do things, it's good for them too, or bad for them, depending on what they're doing. But essentially, it's got to do with how I relate, really, how my emotions or my intellect is expressed in relation to the outside world. Thought is very different. Thought is a garment, it's a means of expression. But to use the Kabbalistic analogy, it's like a tortoise that also has a garment, but it's inseparable from the tortoise, right? Otherwise, it can't be separated. It's part of the animal itself. So thought is a very complicated garment because... Oh, maybe he's there. No, maybe not. Maybe he's in his office. No, he's upstairs. Right? Because thought is, to use the terminology, thought is meshotete tamid, meaning it's always, you're always thinking, right? And it's kind of, when you have a feeling and you start thinking about it, it's almost hard to separate between the feeling itself and the thinking of the feeling. You understand what I'm saying? Because as soon as you have a feeling, automatically you're going to start thinking about it. Because thought is the means of expression within you. It's how you express yourself to yourself. So therefore, love, for example, you obviously think about it right away. If you have a feeling of love, you'll think about it, right? It happens almost instantaneously. But really, it's separated into two. Love is the raw energy, the raw feeling of the power of love. And then thought is how you express that love. You start thinking about it, but it's almost hard to separate them. Is that clear? That's a very important thing. I'll tell you why it's important in a second, okay? Because here's the problem. When the Torah gave us a set of values, the way the Tanya explains it is like this for most people, right? We have an animal soul and our godly soul. Each one has 10 powers. Each one has the 3 intellectual, the 3 7 emotional. Obviously, in the godly soul, the 3 intellectual are more about Torah, but about God, about love of another person, about kindness, about mitzvot, and so on. In the animal soul, it's more about ourselves and so on. All good. Emotions, the same thing. We have emotions of the animal soul, emotions of the godly soul. And then we get taught the following, that you cannot control the 10 emotions of either soul. That's not in our control. Only big tzaddikim can do that. But we have both, and they're both going to fight territorially to conquer the body, to conquer the person, right? But we are in control of our garments, of our thought, speech, and action. So let's talk about in speech and action. In other words, like this. I might be tempted to be, God forbid, violent with someone else, but I can choose not to. I might be tempted to eat something that's very unhealthy for me, but I can decide not to. So I'm not in control of the temptation. The temptation will be there, but I am in control whether I apply it or not, or whether I speak about it. I might want to really gossip about someone else, but I decide not to. I can decide not to. If I think about it, and I make that decision, right? So our decision-making process and the power of choice, which is so fundamental to the Jewish experience, is that we have a choice to use our garments or not. But here comes the problem. The problem, how does that work with thought? Because it's not good enough to say we don't have control of the emotion. We don't really have control of thought either, right? If someone says something to me I really don't like, I don't really have control and say I actually have no feeling of anger or no feeling of hate or no feeling of jealousy. If that's my animal soul weakness, it's going to happen, right? So how can there be a commandment to deal with that? You follow the question? It's an important question because we all have this problem. If you don't, you're at the wrong address. Right?
But there for a minute? Because if you have terrible thoughts, surely you can block them.
Oh, so that's the question. Yes. Yeah. Oh, that's what I wanted to admit. So yeah. No, so this is what I wanted. That's what I want to talk about.
Yeah.
Just a very, but no, no, you're right. But it's just a very important thing to clarify. You are right. You're 100% right. Because, yeah. Right? What we learn is that at the end of the day, thought is a garment, and of garments we have control. So, but with thought, it works a bit different to speech and action in the following way: we do not control the initial thought. That is true, right? Now, why is that so important to understand? We do control the rumination of that thought. We do control if we're going to hold on to that thought. Not easy, but it is expected, right? Not just expected not to get angry, we expect it even to control the thought of anger, okay? The emotion of anger in our thoughts, but not the initial one. The initial thought is not in our control. Why is that so important to understand? Because sometimes when people learn this, and we learn about toxic emotions, and by the way, as I said, the Torah defines certain emotions as toxic. Very different than I mentioned this before, just for those people who are new, it's very different to a lot of common writing and a lot of common self-help theories, which is that all emotions are good and it's okay to harbor emotions. It's you know, that's nonsense according to Judaism.
Yeah.
Right? There are lots of emotions that just aren't good. There are toxic emotions and they're bad. They are evil. But nevertheless, it doesn't mean you're evil. And why it's so important is because sometimes when people start to understand this concept and to learn this concept, they start to feel guilty about having certain thoughts. And that's a problem. And that's wrong. Why is that wrong? They say, you know, we all have a Yetzer Hara, right? We all have this inclination that tries to get us to do the wrong thing. So they say that the greatest Yetzer Hara, the greatest evil inclination, is that our energy of evil inclination gets us to do something wrong, and then it gets us to feel guilty about it. That's even worse, right? Guilt is not helpful, right? Now, why shouldn't we feel guilty about it? Because if you suddenly feel very hurt by someone, you have an emotion of hate or jealousy or anger or worry or anxiety or impatience, all the things you mentioned before, all it means is that you're normal. Yes, you had a thought of something which you're not allowed to hold on to, but you're normal. Because that initial thought is not in your control. Why? Because thought is a garment, but it's a garment different to speech and action, is that it's very hard to separate it out from the emotion, and therefore the initial thought, as soon as you have that feeling, it'll jump under your thought, and the initial thought is something you can't control. Can I have everyone's permission just to have the air conditioning on for a few minutes, just to get a little bit cooler? Just...
I thought it
was on. It was before, but on the right one. That's it. Thank you. It gets cold, we'll turn it off. Okay. Yeah, that's it. Okay. So now the question is, what is our job, right? What is our job? Our job is not to hold on to that thought, right? Not to let the emotion ruminate in our thought. Not to let the emotion continue on in our thought. Now, we need to be very honest that it also is not easy. You said block it, that's true, but how do you block it, right? So that's the question. So
one way. It's music to my ears. You almost translated into something positive.
Okay, that's one way, but okay. And there are ways we can channel, and we'll talk about that in coming weeks, but today we're going to take a different just approach as a general thing, right? Because I should have mentioned this earlier. What I'm going to do today is not talk about any specific weakness. I'm going to deal in weeks coming in specific things and deal with them. But today is just a general strategy that applies to all initial thoughts, to all thoughts of toxic emotion, right? And struggle, inner struggle. Because, let's be honest, even with the tactics we're going to give today and in the coming weeks, it's not easy. Rumination of toxic emotion and feeling is not an easy thing to get rid of. It's our job to get rid of it, but it's not easy. And therefore, if it doesn't happen overnight, you also shouldn't feel guilty. It's a process, it's a journey, and it takes time. Especially if you have a very strong emotion, right? So let's give a couple of scenarios. So for example, someone says something to you that really is insensitive and really hurts you, right? And you start to feel the hurt, you start to feel angry. But you know it's wrong, so what do? What's step one? Or for example, another very good one, I think a very common Jewish one, is let's say someone asked you to do something, you had to say no, right? In a legitimate way. I'm not talking about because you're self-centered and you just couldn't be bothered with other people. You're a kind person. You always help people. You're amazing. You're a compassionate person. You go out of your way for people. But right now, it's just you can't. I don't know. You're finished. You have to take a nap. Or something else equally important has come up and your value system dictates that you attend to someone else in your family. And you have to say no. What happens after that? That's exactly right. Right? Most of us do that, right? Unless we're cruel people to say no, we couldn't guess it. But if a person finds hard to say no, even when we legitimately should say no, and I say that with emphasis because, you know, I always talk about that nowadays the creation of boundaries has become a bit of out of control, so everything's a no. But no, I'm talking about when it's really important to say no, legitimately so, and then we feel guilty. Oh, damn, I feel so guilty that I wasn't able to. I feel so guilty I didn't help that person yesterday, right? I hear this all the time. I hear myself saying it and I hear other people saying it all the time, right? And it's bad. Unhealthy guilt is bad. It's bad for us. Why is it bad for us? You know the test of something's bad? If it leads to better behavior, happier behavior, and effective behavior. And guilt never does. It just paralyzes us, right? Unless it's controlled good guilt, which we'll talk about a little bit later. But so the question is, what's step one? What's step one? Any suggestions besides channeling it?
That's a little guilt. If you leave a parent, if you're immigration,
you leave a parent. All that stuff, yeah. But, okay, but even then, it's not healthy because if you made a decision to do something, so either it was wrong or right. If you feel it's right to do it, then don't be guilty about it, right? I mean, it's easy to say, of course, right? And sometimes it's a complicated process because sometimes we do have conflicting values. Okay, so we have to decide through a process which value is important to respond to and make a decision that it's the right thing to do. And once we make a decision it's the right thing to do, we have to stick by that decision, and plaguing guilt or ruminating guilt is not going to be helpful, right? So how do we... Yeah. So I want to talk about a tool which perhaps is not spoken about enough. The Lubavitcher Rebbe spoke about it a lot in his letters. In fact, it comes up in a chapter later in the book that I used last term, the Letters for Life, a beautiful book, and he put it together very, very well with footnotes and references, and I researched it a bit just to get clarity in this approach. And I'm going to mention what it is, but then break it down a little bit, because actually it's quite a complex approach, a simple approach.
Was that by the Rebbe?
It's called Letters for Life.
Yeah, but was it written by him?
No, it was written by someone now, but it's collected from his stories of him and his writings and his letters that he's written and things like that. Yeah. So he has one chapter that says, I've forgotten what it's called, don't something, but pivot, something like that. Okay, but, and it's a tool called, I'll tell you what it's called in Hebrew, because I'll refer to it as that, because that's where he refers to it always. It's called Hesech HaDa'at. Hesech HaDa'at means distract yourself away from the thoughts. Now, what does that mean? When we have those plaguing thoughts or those inner conflicts and inner dysregulation or struggling with guilt or hate or anger, whatever the case is, and those thoughts pop up in our heart and our head, he writes that he says he's disappointed that it's not spoken about enough and it's not applied enough. And he says it's a difficult thing to apply, but with time it gets easier. And that is to disengage from the thought, not to strengthen it, right? Now, give me a few minutes here to understand what this means. In other words, not to resist it, which means, we'll see how you do it in a minute, but which means not even to fight with it, right? Because sometimes people try and deal with these things by fighting with it. It's bad. I shouldn't feel guilty. It's bad. I know I learned in the shir. It's terrible. And it's this. And it says in this chapter, that chapter. And it's coming from my ego. And it's no good. And it's not going to help. Once you're fighting with something, you're making it stronger. You're using it. Right? There's a verse that King Solomon says in the book of Proverbs, Mishlei. He says, do not answer a fool according to his foolishness, lest you become like him. Right? When you engage with something negative, you become part of the negative process, even if you're fighting with it, because you're engaging with it. Now, we'll see We'll see how strong that is and for how long you should apply this strategy. But it's certainly applicable in the initial stages of the struggle, right? So you're driving a car and suddenly it pops into your head, you know, something that someone said to you 6 months ago that all of a sudden is starting to worry you again, right? Mm-hmm. Popping into your head. You don't have control on that. It's popping into your head. That's just God decided to test you that day. Bringing up an old story, which you thought you dealt with, but you obviously haven't, right?
Thought you dealt with it, what?
But you obviously haven't, because it's coming back to you, right?
Yeah.
Step one is, as soon as it comes up to you, Hesach Hadas. Disengage with it. How do you disengage with it? Oh, so it sounds simple. It does sound simple, but it's actually deep and complex, right? And he says very clearly, he says, diverting attention does not mean battling the thought. For even battling a thought is the opposite of stopping to think about it. Very important, right? If you battle the thought, you're engaging with it. But he says the idea is to completely replace it with something else. Right? And he gives a beautiful analogy. He says, you know why? Because it's like the muscle of a body. We all know if we train and if we do exercise, the more you use a muscle, the stronger it becomes. The more you ignore a muscle, which isn't a good thing in the physical, but the more you ignore a muscle, the weaker it becomes. Right?
How do you differentiate between that and remorse?
Remorse for having the thought?
No, not for you're worried about something that you've done in the past.
Okay.
And so therefore you keep disengaging with it, but you're not dealing with the
I'm gonna come to that.
Be having. Perhaps if you hurt somebody or
Correct. Very good question.
Yeah.
But I would say even then, and we'll come to how you deal with it.
Yeah.
Because remorse is an important part of the process. But remorse and guilt are different. Number one, number two, it doesn't help to have remorse when it's plaguing you. When it starts to worry you, you've got to disengage from it.
Yeah.
And I'll explain what we do with it in a second. That's a very good question. Okay. So therefore, you need to disengage. How do you disengage? The problem is this, obviously, right? You can't just disengage from a thought. This is the problem with thought. Because we're always thinking. You can't stop thinking. No human being can ever stop thinking. Right? We're always wondering. Our mind wonders. Now, the problem is, the way it works is, the way the human design is, We're wired the opposite of how we would love to be wired, right? When it comes to like holy things, we have to actually really pay attention. So when we pray, everyone will tell you, or if they want to admit it at least, that when you pray, even if you're trying to concentrate on your prayers, your mind wanders. And you've got to bring it back, right? So you've got to constantly bring it back. Because we're thinking of things that are outside of our experience, thinking of God, His Torah, His Mitzvot, the prayer, God, whatever, right? And the mind naturally wanders. And then what happens is, when we think of toxic things, the mind doesn't wander. We've got to really work hard to make our mind wander, right? And that's a problem. So the only way to do it, of course, is to substitute it, to actually think about something else, to say, I don't want to, first of all, they have the attitude, I don't want to engage in this altogether. And the only way to do that, we'll come back and talk a bit more in detail what that means, but to actually Stop thinking about it and think of someone else. Think of something else. Now, it's not so simple. We'll talk about how to do that in a minute. But that's the basic idea. But before we talk about the details, I want to just quote a letter of the Rebbe where he takes it even a step deeper. He says, it's going to sound funny, but let me just explain it. He says, not only do you have to have Hesach Hadas, which means not only do you have to divert yourself away from that thought, sometimes for a while you also have to divert yourself away from yourself. Like, stop thinking about yourself so much. Right? In other words, there's disengaging with the thought. But sometimes the reason that thought is plaguing you so much or bothering you so much, not always, but sometimes it's because people have a general problem. And that is that they engage in themselves too much. Just self. They're busy with themselves. Analyzing themselves. Thinking about themselves. I had a discussion the other day with someone who called me for a bit of advice, whatever. It was not in Sydney, it was somewhere else. A teacher in a school, they had a conversation with the principal and they disagreed and he was upset and he asked me how to handle it. But I was a bit puzzled because like he was, I understand you have a different opinion. Look, you work for the guy. At the end of the day, he's the boss. And if you don't like what he's saying, then you can look for another school. But, and he was listening to you. And of course, you should voice your opinion. So he wanted to know what I think about his perspective. It was an educational concept, right? I mean, it's not relevant, the concept here. So I said, it's a bit of both. I see his point. I see your point. I explained to him why. So he said, oh, so I can feel validated enough. I think to myself, it's not about being validated or not validated. Like, it's an example of being like too busy with yourself, like too busy. And that's, nowadays, that's very prevalent, right? People, I mean, touch, I'm untouched. It was, and it's boundaries. There's a boundary, and the person is, I feel safe, don't I feel safe? All this kind of stuff, right? And I think that's what the Rebbe is talking about when he says that sometimes you have to disengage, not only in one place he writes, he says, it's important to make note of, he says to take a pause from analyzing the self more broadly and instead turn the mind towards thinking about God, His greatness, and His role for you, right? There was a story once where the author of the Tanya, the first Chabad Rebbe, he had a private audience. Someone came to him. And as when Hasidim would visit the Rebbe, they would ask a blessing and they would pour out their heart and they would seek guidance and so on. And this person gave a long list. They came with a long shopping list. He said, Rebbe, I need more parnasa, I need more livelihood. I don't know, my daughter has to get married. I'm not feeling so well sometimes. This is wrong, that's wrong. I need this. And give a long list of what he needs. So after he finished, Alter Rebbe, not that those things are not legitimate, they're all legitimate, but it was like a long list. So the Rebbe knew his followers, he knew who he was talking to. He lifted up his eyes, he said to him the following. He says, he said in Yiddish, sounds better, but I'll say it in English. He said, you're thinking a lot about what you need, but you haven't talked about at all what you are needed for. Right? Because what sometimes Hasidim would do when they would have a private audience with the Rebbe, they also seek guidance of how they can better serve God, how they can better be a better person, how they can fulfill their mission in the world in a better way. Right? And he said to him, he says, it's very clear that you're thinking a lot about was du darfst, in Yiddish, means what you need, but you're not thinking was darf man dir, what do we need you for? Like, what are you needed for? Right? And I think that's a really, like, you know, nowadays people are very, sometimes too much into themselves, to the point where we become very fragile. Sometimes, not always, but sometimes the thoughts of anger or hurt or impatience, or whatever the case is, comes because we are very fragile. We've created a very fragile self. A very, like, sort of, I don't know how I say it in English, I know the Yiddish word for it, but a pampered self, that's what I'm looking for, right? We've like sort of pampered ourselves and our emotional state to such a degree that we're not tough, like everything bothers us, right? You know, Dr. Tversky always gave that analogy. He says that when you give someone a little bit of a slap on the back, it's fine, but if he's got a sunburn there, it's very painful, right? So like, you know, we don't have to be so sunburned sometimes. Like, you know, we have to put some spiritual santan on so we're not so sensitive, right? So in other words, but the main point, of course, is not thinking about, is diverting ourselves away from the initial thought, but it also is true that we have to also disengage from thinking about ourselves so much, not to take ourselves so seriously. Now, of course, there's a balance here. I'm not talking about that we should suppress our emotions. I'm not talking about that at all. We're not talking about not validating our emotions. Of course, we have to be aware of our emotional state. That's part of knowing how to deal with it, is knowing what we're feeling. Accept that we're feeling that way, and that's fine. But not to dwell. But the main point here is that with the initial thinking comes along, initial feeling, is to disengage from it right away. Now, the question is like this. First of all, how do we do that? Number one, of course. So, as I said, it's about actually preparing for the scenario. So what the Rebbe recommends is to have things ready to think about. Someone might have a favorite chapter of Tehillim that they like. Chapter of Psalms. Someone might have a particular idea that they've learned recently about. Right? They might have a particular project that they're working on, whatever the case is. So it's not something that can happen automatically. You see, unsettling thoughts or distracting emotions or strong emotions like the feelings of impatience and anger and all those kind of things can actually be very strong. If you start thinking about how to divert your attention from it then and what to substitute, it doesn't always work because it's pounding at you, right? So what he says is you actually have to prepare for this scenario. And we all have to prepare for a scenario because it's going to happen to all of us. To actually have something that we have, that we can think about, that's good for us, that we like thinking about, I give Psalms, that's one idea. And in another letter, he talks about someone, he says you should memorize a few passages of the Mishnah, whatever, everyone does what works for them. It can be anything. It doesn't have to be anything so particularly holy. It could be just anything that is okay to think about, right? And work towards that goal, that any time those things, those ruminations come in, to right away start to say, I'm ignoring this, and start to think about the other thing, right? There are a couple of other practical tips that we'll get to. But the idea is to think about something totally unrelated, with the attitude of, I don't want to touch this. I don't even want to think about it. Now, the question is this. Does that always work? Is that always the way to do it? Why do I say that? Because, I mean, we know there are other tools. There are thought processes we have to go through. We have to, for example, if someone is scared, fear, which the Jewish community, for example, is dealing with a lot now. We know there's things that we have to learn, like Shara Bitachon, right, about learning about Emunah, about Bitachon. We have so much literature about thinking about the evils of anger, why it's wrong to get anger, why it's wrong to be jealous, including things like learning about Hashkacha Pratit, everything happens for a reason, or everything that God gives someone is what they meant to have. If you don't have it, it means you weren't meant to have it. All these things, right? There are thought processes which we use to deal with these kind of feelings. It's not like we just distract ourselves a minute and boom, right? Mm-hmm. Doesn't quite work like that. There certainly are other strategies, which we're going to talk about a lot over the next few months, next few weeks, I mean, right? So, before we answer that question, I want to share with you another letter that he wrote, that the Rebbe wrote, a very interesting thing. He says that there are three kinds of thoughts. Right? What I'm telling you now is a combination of different things, and I just sort of wanted to clarify it together. He says like this, there are three types of thoughts, distracting thoughts that we have, right? There's some things that are stimulated or brought about by circumstances outside of me, which are kind of legitimate, right? So if someone's worried, and worried unnecessarily, because worried about things, when I say unnecessary worry, the definition of unnecessary worry is when you worry about things you can't control, right? Because you can't control anyways, you need to let God run the world, right? We need to worry about things we could control, so if someone's unwell, we need to find, in a matter of urgency, find good medical staff and a good doctor and so on and so forth, but then we have to let go, right? So unnecessary worry or anxiousness, whatever the case is, but sometimes it happens from real things. Someone is unwell. It's a real thing. It's not a made-up worry, right? It might express itself in unhelpful or toxic worry, but it's still something which is problematic, right? A person has a financial problem. He's worried about his next paycheck. That's not nothing. It's a legitimate worry. But what we tend to do as human beings, we tend to over-worry, and then it's unhelpful anyway, right? So that's one type of thing. Then there's kinds of thoughts which are made by things on the outside, but we tend to add to it. We add some ingredients to it ourselves. So the situation is true, but then we make it as if it's much more exaggerated, right? So we concoct a scenario in our minds that's not untrue, but it's exaggerated. So therefore, it's a combination of the circumstance creating the emotion plus us. And then he says, there's a lot of thoughts that we have that is our own story completely. we make it up. Right. One of the examples he gives is like, for example, he says, you think you made a mistake by someone, right? I should have said this, I should have said that. Like, that's just made up stuff, right? It's people have conversations, they try their best, no one's thinking about it, no one else is thinking about it. You just walk around thinking, I should have said something else, or maybe I hurt that person, or maybe not. It's nonsense. It's just something that you're an anxious person, maybe, so therefore you're making up stuff. It's coming, it's what he calls analos yisod klal. It has no foundation in truth or reality. It's just something that you've created, your own story. Very often that happens to us, right? So, this concept of hesach hadas, this concept of diverting ourselves and replacing the thought with someone else and not disengaging it, not even fighting it, that is completely true by the third one. Obviously, if it's made up stuff, it's not real, right? You talked about remorse before, but there's nothing to be remorseful. I didn't do anything wrong. Then there's nothing, it's just, you're just ruminating, right? And people do that. There are people, what is the person going to say? That's just all nonsense. You've got to just permanently disengage from that thought. But how about the thoughts that are not completely made up? How about the thoughts that have a foundation, right? So there, it works in two ways. What has to happen is, initially, Hesachadas, this idea of disengaging with the thought and substituting with something else, is always true in the initial stages. When the thought pops into your head and starts to plague you, that's when you've got to completely disengage. Why? Because if you deal with it even in a legitimate way, like trying to remember the things that you learned or trying to apply the tools which we're going to talk about in the next coming week, all those kind of stuff, you're not going to be successful because right now you are being controlled by the emotion. You aren't in control of it. When it comes at you, you're not in control. Right? So I'll give you an example. Going to your question. There are things that we do have to regret. Let's say we actually really make a mistake. Right? Let's say you put your foot in your mouth and you insulted someone and you know you did the wrong thing. Right? Happens. And now I'm driving home and I'm feeling really guilty. Right? Now, on one hand, I should feel guilty. I did something wrong. For which I need to do tshuva. We have the concept of Judaism called tshuva, which is repentance. Repentance has three stages. One is reflecting what I've done. Second is feeling uncomfortable with what I've done, which is like regret or remorse. Thirdly, resolving not to do it again. Or if it's a case between people, you need to fix it. You need to apologize, right? So there's a process. And that process, part of that is thinking about it and thinking about what you've done and remorse and so on and so forth. But here's the thing. That never works when you do it emotionally when it happens. Even there, initially, you have to get it out of your mind and think about something else. And then, as the Alter Rebbe says in a different place in Tanya, you have to designate a specific time to think about it. Why? And that's, by the way, what I call healthy guilt. And not a long time. Because guilt is debilitating, but you do need to feel uncomfortable. So what do? There are times, Yom Kippur, or before Yom Kippur, there's a time each night before you go to bed, whatever the time you designate. What's the difference? The difference is because when you get into the car after just putting your foot in your mouth, as an example, and you're feeling terribly guilty, the guilt is controlling you, you're not controlling the guilt. And it won't be effective. So therefore, the initial stage is, you know what, I'm going to deal with this, but not now. Now I'm going to think about something that's strengthening me. I'm going to think about something. I made a mistake. All human beings are mistakes. Fine. Goodbye. I'm not thinking about the guilt now. Because that guilt is not there to help you. That guilt is there to further paralyze you. That's the way the design of the human being is. That's the way the animal soul works. It makes you do something stupid and then puts in guilt so you should feel even more stupid. And you're not going to be able to do anything from it.
It's like saying, I think I should sleep on this. You think you should... deal with the problems, but then you think, I'll have a good night's sleep.
Yeah. So in emotional, it's the same thing. You need to wait for a space that you're stronger, and you do that by first disengaging with the thought, right? Same thing with anger, by the way. If we get angry with a person, it's normally bad, but there might be a reason we got. I mean, that anger, sometimes we're just annoyed or we irritate it, so we get angry. That could be we didn't sleep enough, or it could be that someone actually really hurt us. And by the way, it might be something that we actually deal with, we have to deal with. We probably dealt with it in the wrong way by losing our temper. Okay, but I'm feeling very angry, feeling very hurt. That's a negative thing. But even if I have to deal with it, initially, the first thing I have to do is disengage. Then I have to come back later and I say, why did I get angry? Let's learn about anger. Let's learn about what the problem with anger is. Why is losing your temper so bad? So you go to a shir, you understand, you open up a book, you read an essay, or you think I have unfinished business with that person, always triggers me. Why? Why is it happening? But not initially. The initial response always has to be, Hesachada, substitute it with something else, something healthier. You know, going back to just, I wanted to mention this, going back to the thing I said before about not only disengaging with the thought, but disengaging from self also for a while. Just two things. The Rebbe once wrote a letter to someone who was being plagued by all these different kinds of emotions, and for her it was very legitimate, some of them, and she felt that there's things in her life she has to fix, and unfinished business, and all that kind of stuff. And the Rebbe wrote to her, he didn't dismiss it, he didn't just say just dismiss everything, because probably some of the stuff did need to be dealt with. But in that case, he wrote to her, gave her advice, he says, make up with yourself that for a whole year you're not going to think about it. Put it on the back burner. For a year you're just going to engage in positivity, in doing for others, in you're going to think about not only disengage with the thought, but disengage a little bit with yourself, as we said before. I heard recently a little video from Viktor Frankl. I told you, I think. I forgot to tell you. I discovered a whole bunch of interviews with him on YouTube. They're fascinating. If you just search Viktor Frankl, you'll see.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, fascinating, fascinating. He talks beautifully, absolutely beautifully. And one thing he says, the interviewer asked him about this concept called self-actualization that people talk about a lot today, right? That learning to express self and, you know, discovering self and looking for your truth and all this kind of stuff that people do nowadays. And he said that's nonsense. He says, why is this nonsense? He says, if you look for self like actualization, you're never going to get it, he said. His whole idea was look for meaning. Look to live a life of meaning and self-actualization will fall onto your lap. It's a beautiful, beautiful line. He said, if you live a life of meaning, yourself will come out. It'll come out in the meaning. It'll come out to do the meaning the best way possible. Right? So that's the idea, that general idea we spoke about before, about not taking yourself so seriously. So even when there are things that we do need to deal with, whether it's having remorse or dealing with unfinished business or learning about the particular challenge, learning about jealousy and hashgacha pratit or emunah or any other strategy or any other tool, the initial response to plaguing thoughts and emotions always has to be, think about something else. And when we talk about think about something else, I just want to add a couple of practical tips. One is to think about something, like we said before, to prepare something to think about when that's happening. Another way is actually the power of action. The power of action is very, very powerful. And one, when it's appropriate or when it's practical, one of the ways to actually get rid of a plaguing thought is to go do something for someone else. Do something for someone else. A fascinating thing, there's once a lady that wrote a letter to, I'm just quoting him because I saw a lot of letters on this topic. A lot of letters to the Lubavitcher Rebbe that she has a very big problem. She feels very resentful of her husband's daughter from a previous marriage. Because he loves her, it's his daughter, and he and she's feeling very jealous or resentful. You know, these things happen, right? Like, is it her attention, whatever the case is. And the Rebbe wrote to her that, he wrote about such an interesting thing, he wrote to her about, he gave her advice, and it was obviously plaguing her the whole time, right? Same thing, thought is coming in. And he told her that, you know, you have to reflect on Ahavat Yisrael, doing love for other people, doing love particularly for children love to be loved, and it's your husband's child, right? So his suggestion was, not only to get rid of the thought, but don't do, love her. Shower her with love. It's like almost counterintuitive, but you know who did this? Yosef, at Tzaddik. Joseph in Egypt. When the brothers came down, and he knew those were the people that threw him into the pit. It's getting late, so I'll say it very briefly. He held one of them back, right? While they went to get the youngest one who didn't come. So he kept one back. You know who he kept back? Shimon. Why? Because Shimon was the person who was the worst. When they threw him to the pit, Shimon threw boulders against him. Really tried to kill him. So why did he keep him back? So the Midrash says that in the few weeks that the other brothers weren't there, he loved him. He showered him with banquets and dined him and gave him unbelievable love. Why? Because he didn't want to have any trace of revenge or hatred. So another tactic is actually do something. Either do something for someone else or do something for the very person that's bothering you. I know it's hard sometimes, but it's an amazing tool. Let me just conclude with two very quick things. First of all, it's a bit of homework. We need to try and practically apply this, right? So one of the ways to do it is actually to, we're all going to have, in the next week, it's almost guaranteed that we're going to have distracting thoughts, whatever it is, whether it's being annoyed with someone or upset with someone or whatever the case is. Try this. Try it once. It's not easy. It takes practice. The Rebbe says it takes sometimes months to get this right. But think of something that you can think about when that happens and try and apply it. And finally, I'll just tell you one interesting little story. There was a woman called Razel Volovovsky. She was a mother, late 20s, and she has a lot going on. She was involved in a preschool that she was building. And anyway, she was stressed, right? Very, very stressed. And she wrote to the Rebbe about what should she do about it. And her children tell the story. The Rebbe wrote to her that what I want you to do is, again, it's like doing something opposite, right? But he didn't tell her, like, never be stressed, or you can't do that. If a person's stressed, they're stressed. But he said to her, every Friday night when you light the candles, I want you to do it with extreme calmness. Extreme calmness. Just like put yourself in the moment. For those few moments, just light the candles with extreme calmness. And they're right. It was interesting advice because in many homes, unless you're super organized, but many homes, the particularly in very Shabbat observant homes, the moments before candle lighting time is like mayhem, right? Especially got the last little kids, the kids dressed, the pots washed, the things cooked, there's a late table late. It's like, right? It's a bit hectic sometimes, right? And it's then that the Rebbe said, go light the candles and just ignore everything. And just focus on the candles. It's calming, spiritual thing. And she said it saved her life. Because she put herself into that just one time a week, and that kind of had an impact on the rest of the week. It's interesting that you do the opposite sometimes, and it helps you. So that's just a general tool. Next few weeks, we're going to talk about specific scenarios of inner struggles and daily struggles, and talk about some specific tools and perspectives. Yeah?
Are all thoughts your own? What about the guru?
What about the?
Iburu. Like, are all thoughts your own, or are they?
Iburu is a... Yeah, but it doesn't matter if it's Iburu or not. First of all, in Kabbalah it says that Iburu is something that tzaddikim actually have sometimes. That's different. That's a whole other perspective. Sometimes a tzaddik who's in control of his thoughts will have a thought coming from a different neshama, and the purpose is for him to give it a tikkun. That's only for tzaddikim. We're not tzaddikim.
So we don't have
so much Iburu, no. But God allows it to trigger us sometimes because he wants us to fight it. So he wants us to ignore it. He wants us to work with it. Become stronger people. Have a wonderful week.